Weston McKinney. Des making a big run. It's meant for him. Des is snuck in behind. Des into the middle. Pulisic scores! Might have paid the price, but the U.S. takes the lead.
And that is how soccer's supposed to be. We have a goal. That first and foremost is very awesome. Second of all, you have a winner. We had a winner yesterday, Dusty, in World Cup. A winner. That means one team scores more goals than the other and is determined as the winner. I don't know if I mentioned this before, but we have a winner. USA. USA. I believe that we can win. See, now we can use that chant instead of I believe that we can tie. No. We won. We, as in USA, won over Iran by a final of 1-0. It wasn't... It was a little bit stressful, obviously, for quite some time. But USA gets it done. You heard the goal, and a guy giving up his manhood, basically, to score a goal in soccer. And that's what it takes to avoid ties, is somebody having the guts to do something like that. And the USA moves on, and they will take on the Netherlands on Saturday morning at 9 a.m. our time. As that'll be the round of 16, USA in the last 16 for the third time, last four World Cups, but they might not have Pulisic or Josh Sargent for that match after they both left yesterday's game with injuries, so that could be a factor for the USA going forward. I don't know much about the Netherlands, but based on what Clint Dempsey said about the USA's performance yesterday, he's pretty fortunate.
Yeah.
He was not overly impressed by what the USA... He was just being an analyst. I give him credit. You know, instead of, well, I'm a USA former soccer player, I could just go, woohoo, we won, yay. He was breaking it down, and he was... there's mistakes here that the USA is very fortunate that they moved on to the next round, is what he was saying.
I watched zero of the matches. I'll say that up front. Mm-hmm. But I don't believe they probably played well in any of them. Yeah. Like, it's like they're fortunate to have
England. It sounded like England they played pretty well.
That one probably to get the tie there was a huge deal, obviously.
Right. Of course, they should have won their first one.
But as far as, Wales, they should have never lost. And yesterday they're kind of lucky to creep by them. And so, they've obviously got a little work to do here if they want to keep going in this field of now 16.
I get the feeling that we're done next.
I think Netherlands is probably going to knock us out.
That's kind of how
what
I feel.
Would predict. That's based very loosely on
sure.
My little bit of soccer knowledge.
Sure.
But how can you feel great about it?
I don't. And then if you add the injuries into the whole equation on top of all of that, you say that the USA doesn't have a great chance of winning the next round. But maybe they will. Yeah. I don't know for sure.
Pulisic claimed he'll be ready to go.
That's what
he
claims.
We'll see what happens.
I don't know, man. I took a shot in that area. I don't know if I'm ever ready to go ever again. And, ready to go in any type of situation after that thing. Holy cow. All right, local sports, Dusty.
Yes, we have high school basketball locker room chats coming up here this evening, so stay tuned for those. We'll talk with the head coaches of Beloit Osborne Smith Center and Thunder Ridge this evening. Those will begin around 5:10, as they will each night during the high school basketball season and wrestling season. Tuesday's wrestling, Wednesday and Thursday are basketball locker room chats. So that's a look at what we'll have coming up here tonight. And then tomorrow night, we'll talk with the coaches of St. John's Tipton, Lakeside, Rock Hills, and Sylvan Lucas. It's on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com. Again, if you ever miss them, you can go back, and especially if you missed last night's wrestling locker room chats, go back and listen on the podcast at katycountry94.com. High school wrestling and basketball competition begin on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday for area teams. Full schedules for all those teams are posted at ncksports.com. Again, Friday night, it's Beloit at Concordia on Katy Country 94, also on the Beloit Trojan channel, ncksports.com, and on Z96.3 Through the Lake. Lakeside opens at Tescott. Pregame on both stations beginning at 5:50 for the girls' game. Boys' action to follow. You can listen online at katycountry94.com as well. As high school basketball approaches, the Kansas Basketball Coaches Association released their preseason rankings on Tuesday and ranked from the area. Not a lot, really, from the immediate area. In fact, it's two, really, from the immediate area. And 2A girls, Smith Center starts the season at number 2. And a 1A Division I girls, Osborne begins the year at number 3. Both were state qualifiers last year. Smith Center finished 3rd in state last year in 2A. So they're kind of... piggybacking off of what they maybe did last year to get themselves ranked higher to start this year. Also in 3A boys, Southeast Saline starts the year at number 2. 3A girls, Southeast is number 9. And from the Mid-Continent League in 3A girls, Phillipsburg starts number 3. And TMP boys into Class 2A starting the year at number 2. So you can find, again, full rankings for the KBCA at ncksports.com. Also, a lot of area football honors were released yesterday, and it would take us forever to go through all the names that are on there from the area, because they're the Northern Plains League. Obviously, we have 13 teams there, and then all district and District 4 and 8 Man Division 2 was basically an all NPL group except for Wakefield. So we're not going to be able to go through all those. We'll tell you some of the first team selections from the area in those. A lot of those athletes were first team on both lists, including Lakeside's Ian Kersine at running back, Luke Bates from St. John's Tipton at tight end, kicker, and punter, Sam Kendig of Osborne at offensive line, Cooper Germark of St. John's Tipton at linebacker, and Hunter Howell of Osborne at defensive back. Again, they were both on both the first team All-NPL and first team All-8-Man Division II District 4. Thunder Ridge was very well represented on the All-NPL first team. Dylan Bice at quarterback and defensive back, Jace Randall at running back, Brian Shaw offensive line and defensive line, Josh Ferguson offensive line and linebacker, and Caleb Wagenblast at defensive line as well. Vowden Dole was a first team All-NPL tight end from Sylvan Lucas, and Lane Homewood was first team defensive back for the Mustangs, and from Lincoln, Brandon Sinclair, first team linebacker, Caleb Dotter, first team return specialist. So we kind of got the first team All-NPL. Again, for the full All-NPL and All-8-Man Division II District 4 selections, visit ncksports.com. North Central Kansas League All-League football team is posted there as well. There's some Concordia representation there. Again, that's all posted at the website, ncksports.com. So that should catch you up with what's going on here in the local sports world today.
The NPL, we haven't had the All-League for football.
This is the third year they've done football for NPL.
I know that for a long time they didn't do it.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of it, to be honest. Because
you don't, everybody don't see anybody.
Yeah, you're in completely different districts. Yeah, so NPL teams are going to face each other. Maybe you're going to have four games against NPL teams on your schedule out of 8 in the regular season.
So you don't see half of them.
You don't see them all. Then this year it's even more watered down because they only did the 8-man part of it, which there's 4 6-man teams now in the NPL. So there were less spots obviously to be had from that aspect of it too. But they put it together and they release it. So that's what we ended up with. A lot of Thunder Ridge on the first team.
Yeah. I mean, you figure that because Thunder Ridge obviously was a team from the league that went on to the championship game before falling to Axtell in the finals. And that's what we have. So all those are posted there. We'll also put them in the archives. We'll need to do that as well so that people can go back and look at those in the future. But there is a story with all of that. Is all of it? Do we have all the All-League now for football?
We should. Yep. I believe everything's up there now.
All right. Interesting. K-State in Focus we're going to do here in a little bit, although we're kind of going to do some of this stuff ahead of time because of just the order how it all works. But it is being reported today that the Big 12 Conference has confirmed that K-State will play in the Sugar Bowl if TCU goes to the College Football Playoff. Now, if the Wildcats win the Big 12 title game, they're going to the Sugar Bowl anyway.
Yeah, as the Big 12 champion.
Right. So what we're saying is that they're essentially guaranteed the Sugar Bowl no matter what. Now, I guess if you want to start getting your hotel room and this and that, okay, proceed at your own risk. But these are the reports that are coming out saying that Texas isn't going to somehow get past K-State. Like, if K-State gets blown out by TCU, is Texas going to suddenly go to the Sugar Bowl instead of Kansas State? According to the Big 12 Conference, no, that's not going to happen.
They've already got packages on the K-State Alumni Association travel page for the Sugar Bowl.
For the Sugar Bowl, which will be against either Alabama or Tennessee, it appears.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
So, yeah, based on all that.
It's pretty much a done deal outside of something really insane happening. And I can't think of it, what it could be, to be honest with you.
What it could be? I mean, the only thing it could be is if you somehow put Texas ahead of
K-State.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the only thing.
And Texas did beat K-State head-to-head. That did happen in Manhattan.
Yeah, they did.
But K-State's got the better resume. And you still sit here as K-State fans sitting here going, man, what if we did not lose to Tulane? Like, maybe. No, you wouldn't get. Listen, if you didn't lose to Tulane, I still don't think K-State's going to the playoff. I don't, because they'd be two losses, even if the Tulane loss turned into a win. They'd still have two losses. No two-loss team has ever made the playoff since they started the playoff, and if there is going to be a first-time two-loss team, you know what conference is coming from. Like, right now, if K-State would have beaten Tulane, Would they be ranked ahead of Alabama or Ohio State right now?
No.
So, thus, they wouldn't be in the playoff.
No, yeah.
And I see K-State fans going, well, you know, actually, you know, we maybe somehow could get into the playoff. How do you figure that? You think, like, if you beat TCU 100-0, you're going to the playoff? You're still probably not going to the playoff. You're not taking a team with, if they've never taken a team with two losses, they're not going to catapult a three-loss Big 12 champion K-State over Alabama, Ohio State, and whoever else is ahead of them in the rankings. I don't have it in front of me.
There's too much.
There's way too much, yeah. So it's not going to happen. So I mean, it's Sugar Bowl. You better hope Sugar Bowl. That's the best you're going to do is win the Big 12, go to the Sugar. Worst case, lose the Big 12 championship, still go to the Sugar. Yeah. That's a pretty good scenario. But you're not going to the playoff, K-State fans. Stop it. The few that are out there that actually think that's possible. Yeah, Alabama does not play this week. They're guaranteed to stay where they are. So is Ohio State.
Yeah,
you're not putting K-State as a three-loss team over Ohio State with a one loss. And you're going to go, oh, win the Big 12 championship. Yeah, you have two more losses. You lost to Tulane. Okay? I mean, I know Tulane's ranked, but come on. Let's be realistic a little bit here. There's not too many people that think that, but there's a few people. You don't understand college football, and you don't understand how this all works if you think K-State has a chance for the playoff right now. They have two losses. They wouldn't have a chance.
No, not likely.
Do you think they have a chance?
It would have to be all those teams that are playing for championships would lose.
But that's impossible because you have six teams.
Like the top four.
Like
USC would have to lose. Michigan's have to lose. You know, those teams.
If Georgia, Michigan, TCU all lose, yeah, it's all one loss, a better record in K-State.
Yeah.
And they all made the conference title games. So, okay, USC loses. Well, then what you would need is Ohio State, Alabama to have two losses. Tennessee would still be ahead of K-State.
Yeah. I mean, all those teams aren't moving that are ahead of K-State that are not in the top four.
No. I mean,
because they don't play.
No. If K-State was 10-2 and beat Tulane, they'd probably be ahead of Clemson and Penn State. But I would bet you they're still behind Alabama and Tennessee and Ohio State.
Yeah.
So then they'd be eighth. How are they going to jump? How are they going to jump again? They're going to jump two SEC teams that aren't playing. Because they won a Big 12 championship.
That would be your point of contention.
You still would have to jump Ohio State, who has one loss.
Yeah, your point of contention would be they didn't play.
Yeah.
And so we did, and we've got that data point.
Yeah.
With two losses. We're talking about the Tennessees and Alabamas of the world, right?
Right.
But, yeah, you'd still need all those other teams to lose ahead of you.
Yeah, even if they
I'm not even talking about Tennessee and Alabama not playing. You would need every single one of those teams to lose.
Well, you're basically saying
conference championship.
You're basically saying they have to lose a third time, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Alabama's two losses.
But no, I'm saying the four teams up ahead, all those teams have to lose, and then you have to rely on being able to jump the other teams.
Which we've established they would not do, even with two losses. So we'll move on. I mean, there is no likelihood.
No, there is
no likelihood. There is none. 0.00000 that K-State would jump Alabama and Tennessee, even if they beat Tulane. There's no way they'd be ranked ahead of them now, and they wouldn't jump them. Now, should they? Yes. If they won the Big 12 and had an extra data point, they should. Would they? No. We all know the answer to this.
Yeah.
You know, K-State, I mean, we all know the answer. How do we know the answer? TCU, there's talk that even if they lose, they still might get dropped below a team like Ohio State. So, even Alabama would be an argument, which is ridiculous. It does sound like, watching the show last night, that TCU really, for the most part, is in. I mean, that's how all the big-time guys now are saying. Is that even Herb Street and others, the only drama is Utah and USC. So, you know, yesterday, Jason and I were way more optimistic. You're the one that were pessimistic, saying that, you know, TCU loses, you think they're out. We actually thought there's a better chance they're in, even if they lose, because of what happened this past weekend. And the big-time guys that push all their agendas last night on the College Playoff show pretty much were like, TCU's in no matter what.
Yeah.
That's refreshing because that's how it should be.
It's just hard for me to believe if USC wins and TCU loses that they're going to get in over Ohio State. But
yeah,
that's how they feel is going to happen. That's what I would want to happen.
Sure.
But it's hard for me to believe that.
One other K-State note on this date in history, 1988. So we're going back 34 years. Bill Snyder became the head coach of the Kansas State Wildcats football program for the first time, taking over a team that hadn't won its last 27 games. It was 0-27 prior to that. Snyder led K-State to a 215, 117, and 1 record over 27 seasons. That was an unbelievably great day for K-State football and K-State fans and businesses and business owners and people that weren't even born yet, and nobody knew it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knew it at the time. Jump into KU. Lance Leipold will make $5 million in the first year of his new deal with annual $100,000 increases. Leipold also gets a $750,000 signing bonus, while his buyout rises to $12.5 million before gradually decreasing over time. His original contract was $16.5 million for a six-year deal that paid him $2.2 last year. Now he's getting a raise big time, which he deserves based on what he's done. He had a year added to the deal on September 1st before leading KU to a 5-0 start. And they're 6-6, making their first bowl appearance since 2008 when they went to the Orange Bowl. The contract also takes care of Leipold's staff, allocating a pool of $5 million for assistant coaches and the strength coach, with an additional $100,000 available each year, and $2.5 million for the rest of the football staff with the same increases. That all sounds great. Now, listen to this little clause, which is smart on Lance Leipold's part, big time, him and his agent. If KU football, if their football stadium renovations don't meaningfully begin by December of 2023, so that's a year from now, Coach Leipold can terminate his contract for $0. If the Anderson Family Football Complex renovations don't start by July 1st, which is the middle of next year, Lance Leipold can terminate the contract for $0. Now, you wouldn't agree to a clause like that unless you knew you were going to make that happen.
Yeah.
But it is one of those things like, listen, you are committing and you're saying you're going to do these things, but until it actually starts happening, I have an out. Makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense to me. That's the ultimate commitment, you know, no doubt. So KU keeps their coach. We'll see how many years they're able to keep him at KU. Maybe he's going to, that'll be his final stop. We shall see. But KU kept him, and K-State's keeping Klieman, which we didn't. None of us thought there was any danger of any of this stuff happening where Leipold and Klieman were going to leave. Leipold was maybe a little more likely because he had a tie to Nebraska. And then, of course, Nebraska's got Matt Rhule, and I think all three universities should be happy with who they have now.
Oh, absolutely. There's only like one school that I might be worried about with Klieman, and that's Iowa. If they get rid of Kirk Ferentz here and things change.
Which could happen.
Absolutely, it could. Mm-hmm. And so that's really the only school that I'm overly worried if something would come up right now with Klieman.
Okay. College football playoff rankings were released last night, and no surprises, Georgia number one, Michigan number two, TCU number three, all undefeated. Southern Cal is number four at 11-1. Ohio State sits at 5 at 11-1. Alabama sits at 6 at 10-2. Tennessee sits at 7 at 10-2. Penn State 10-2 at 8. Clemson 10-2-9. K-State's the highest ranked three-loss team. They are ranked 10th. Utah is 11th. Washington is 12th. LSU drops from 5 to 14. Interesting things from last night's reveal. One, they punished LSU severely, as they should have, losing to a Texas A&M team that has a losing record. So that's good news, I think, for TCU. Ohio State looks like they're in if Southern Cal loses, even though they lost by 22 at home to Michigan. And if Michigan wins, loses, I think it's pretty clear that they're still going to be in this playoff. And it even seemed like last night what everybody was saying is that TCU loses, they're probably in. It almost sounds like the only way Ohio State is in is if Southern Cal loses, which would make some sense. I mean, Southern Cal would have two losses, Ohio State would have one, but Southern Cal putting at risk an extra game because they're good enough to make the conference title game, and Ohio State was not. And Southern Cal's one loss is by 1 point. I hear all this, Alabama's losses were close and tough, and well, what has Southern Cal's one loss? They lost to a team that went for two just like LSU did to Alabama. Why is it Southern Cal getting more leeway? They're not, and we know why. But what's interesting is they asked the committee, Reese Davis, I thought Reese Davis has come to the Big 12 side of things. And he's going to be there in Arlington on game day. And it's interesting because the stooge from down south that has his show, he doesn't prepare for, I won't mention his name because I'm not going to promote him. He now all of a sudden is interested in the Big 12 title game after game day announces they're going to be there, and he works for the network. So now suddenly he's, oh, I'm coming around. I'm really interested in watching K-State TCU after last week saying nobody wants to watch it. That's called getting in line with the company line, and that's called a complete shill. You're a complete shill. You're a complete stooge. You are going to do whatever they... If they ask you to strip your clothes down and get naked on television for money, you probably will do it. That's the type of guy. He will do whatever he needs to do to get paid, apparently. Okay, I might have exaggerated a little bit, but still, if he needs to go out there and embarrass himself and they give him an extra $1 million to prove a point, I'm pretty sure he'll do it. And it just cracks me up. So Alabama and Tennessee, last night they're asking about, well, would anything change? Ohio State and Alabama and Tennessee are not going to play again until a bowl game. So would anything change? And it shouldn't, because they're in the clubhouse and they've posted their score. All right, they're all in the clubhouse at 4 under par. Okay, and Southern Cal and TCU and Michigan and Georgia are the leaders of the golf tournament in the first, second, third, fourth positions, and they got probably a 2-stroke lead over the those that are in the clubhouse, but they have a hole to play. Okay, so that's the analogy I like to use, is that I think in particular, you know, Michigan, TCU, and Southern Cal, yeah, Georgia has an insurmountable lead to where they're in the playoff, in a golf playoff, all right? Michigan, TCU, and Southern Cal are teeing off on the 18th tee box, and they have at least a 2-stroke lead, 1 or 2-stroke lead over Ohio State, and then maybe a 3-stroke lead over Alabama and Tennessee. They asked, Reese Davis asked the committee chair, Boo Corrigan, and no, he's not part of Halloween festivities. He does spell it that way, B-O-O, by the way. And Reese Davis said, well, you know, is there anything that changes with Ohio State and Alabama? And the guy was making it sound like there could be. What changes? Ohio State, they don't play. Alabama don't play. And what they were asking is, could Alabama jump Ohio State, was the question. They both don't play. If Alabama's behind Ohio State now, how in the world does Alabama jump Ohio State when they both don't play? And the argument was, by somebody after the show, was, well, okay, if Michigan loses to Purdue, Ohio State's loss doesn't look as good. And if, what was the other one for Alabama? Oh, if LSU would beat Georgia or play super close, Alabama's loss to LSU looks better. Right. So now we're comparing losses and how bad they look or how good losses look, which is ludicrous. And at the same time, they mentioned TCU and they said, well, we value winning. Well, if you value winning, Alabama won less than Ohio State. If you value winning, Tennessee shouldn't be behind Alabama in the rankings when Tennessee beat Alabama head-to-head. Well, they lost to South Carolina. So did Clemson. Clemson's at 9. All right, they lost, and they're lost less than Tennessee did to South Carolina. Why is Clemson 9 and Tennessee 7? Why is Tennessee ahead of Clemson? Tennessee got blown out by South Carolina. It's just weird, and it shouldn't really matter. The bottom line is this. If Georgia, Michigan, TCU, Southern Cal win, we have a boring weekend. Everything goes as planned, and Ohio State and Alabama, who didn't even win their divisions, and Tennessee and Penn State and Clemson, Clemson won their division. They're in the ACC title game. But all those teams are eliminated. And basically what we have here is the only chaos I can see is if TCU and Southern Cal both lose, you put Ohio State in, and you're arguing Alabama or Tennessee instead of TCU. That's the only chaos I see. And Alabama will get in over Tennessee if that's what it comes down to, because they're Alabama, and Tennessee lost their quarterback to a torn ACL, yet they beat Alabama head-to-head. So the head-to-head won't mean anything, even though they have the exact same record. And then they're going to point to the close losses that Alabama had, even though TCU could have a close loss to K-State, and they'll punish them for it, possibly. But it does sound like TCU's in pretty good shape, unless they completely embarrass themselves Saturday morning against K-State in the Big 12 title game, which means that USC is probably the most vulnerable. They're playing a team they already lost to by 1. They can't avenge the only loss. So then you're going to come down to the argument, if Southern Cal loses, is it Ohio State or Alabama? Ohio State with 1 loss, Alabama with 2. Now, I think if Michigan takes care of business, I don't see how Alabama gets over Ohio State, because Ohio State would have lost to an undefeated team. Alabama did not lose to undefeated teams. They lost by to Tennessee, who has 2 losses. They lost to LSU, who has 3 losses now, and got beat by a lowly Texas A&M team. So I don't see Alabama having a leg to stand on when it comes to a resume, as long as Michigan takes care of business. Now, if Michigan somehow loses, that's maybe the slight opening Alabama needs to somehow jump Ohio State, despite having 1 more loss and a worse record, to get into the 4th spot, assuming Southern Cal would lose. But this is a very good question that was put out there last night. These are the conference championship title games. Like, this is what you want to do. You want to win conference championships. The goal is to win conference championships and then win a national championship. And usually the first step is you win a conference championship. Georgia is one win away from winning the SEC again. Michigan is a win away from winning the Big Ten again. TCU is a win away from winning the Big 12. And Southern Cal is a win away from winning the Pac-12. And Ohio State, Alabama, Tennessee, Penn State do not play. Clemson's in the ACC title game. K-State is. Utah is. Washington doesn't play. So forth and so on. What is the incentive right now?
To,
I mean, what we have here is the only thing. Georgia, Michigan, TCU, and Southern Cal are putting their playoff chances at peril by playing an extra game to win a conference title, and these other teams being discussed that are on the outside looking in didn't even make it to the conference title game, and they are, and these teams have the better records on top of it. I understand if there's a two-loss team that wins the SEC, and you want to compare them to, well, not the SEC, but a two-loss team that wins a conference. Like if USC was 10-2 right now, and they won the conference versus an Alabama who's 10-2, one extra data point. I understand listing an argument a little bit. But that's not the case. So the question was thrown out there. What is the incentive for Georgia, Michigan, TCU, or USC to play in their conference championships when the only consequence of playing would be losing and letting teams who weren't good enough to play this weekend jump you? Because they are the four best teams in America. They have been the best teams in their conference all year long, all four of them. And now they've got to play, in the case of Southern Cal and TCU, a rematch. Now, Southern Cal lost to the team they're playing. TCU's got the biggest argument. Why do we got to play a team we already beat?
Right.
Michigan's playing somebody different. Georgia's playing somebody different. Some years they play LSU. It just depends on the schedule. And it's really a good point. Georgia, Michigan, and TCU and Southern Cal are putting a lot on the line to play an extra game while these other teams weren't good enough to get to the extra game and that they could benefit. That's a messed up system. And once again, it's why the playoff is a joke.
Yeah, I don't want to go too, like, I don't want to overcorrect here because I think this year has been a little strange in that, you know, we've talked about the top three could probably lose and still be in. And so if that were the case, you could have the SEC champion not in, you could have the Big Ten champion not in, you could have the Big 12 champion not in, and you could only have one conference champion if Southern California would win. When the argument at the beginning of the year is we have five conference champions and only four spots. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to make wholesale changes just because one year goes crazy, and then we also have the expanded playoffs on the horizon too. So, but yeah, you're right. It is strange. It's tough to tell those teams right now. You know, they don't want to hear that this is just a quirky year because they're the ones in it. But yeah, there is really no incentive for TCU to really go out and play this game except for the fact that,
well, there's incentive. They feel like they have to win. They're in the playoff, but the point is, I think the incentive is a little bit wrong because there's incentive to win a conference championship. However, you are risking more by playing in this game.
Yep.
You're risking more by playing in this game. Now, granted, Ohio State and Alabama need some help to get in, whereas you control your path or destiny, as they say. And it's hard to go undefeated, and you got three teams trying to go 13-0, and the odds of that happening are fairly slim, but could happen. They're all favored in their conference title games. The interesting thing to me is if the Pac-12 did not have a championship game,
right,
would Southern Cal be ahead of Ohio State and Alabama?
I think so. I personally think so.
So there's no need for the Pac-12 to have a title game this year. There's no need for the Big 12 to have one. There's no need for the SEC, which Georgia's clearly the best team in that conference. And there's no need for Michigan to have one because they just beat the other best team in the conference. So really, conference title games are money-grabbing events that really aren't necessary. We already have our conference champions, but they now have to prove it a second time. You get my point? USC is atop the Pac-12 rankings. They have the best record. They already would have won the regular season Pac-12 championship. Despite a loss, they would have won the Pac-12 championship. TCU has already won the Big 12. Michigan's already won the Big 10. Georgia's already won the SEC, and now they got to do it twice. So while these other teams that don't have to do it aren't good enough the first time, it's almost like they get a do-over possibly.
Yeah.
That's not right.
Right. I think most years the gulf between 6 and 4 isn't as big. It's a smaller margin. So therefore, the champion, the championship game means a little bit more, or the conference championship would mean a little bit more. I want to say this is just kind of a fluky year, but then again, it's right here in our face, and it's happening. So you do have to deal with it. I think the worst case scenario is a TCU or a Georgia wins their game but loses a quarterback to injury.
Yeah, it's a key player.
Especially in TCU's case where it's a rematch, and you're like, why did we have to do that?
It's an interesting point. What if TCU loses in a close game, K-State and Max Duggan's out for the year? Do they suddenly punish TCU and put Alabama or Ohio State in because TCU's quarterback's hurt? Because they're punishing Tennessee for their quarterback being hurt.
Right. I think if it's a close game...
That's a bunch of crap.
Yeah, I think if it's a close game, they'll still go with the season and keep TCU in. But, like, say that's a first series injury, and the backup just doesn't have it that night, that day, or on Saturday, and it gets out of hand. Then I think that's a...
Yeah.
A real point of contention, and see,
it shouldn't be.
Yep. And this is why I fear a little bit with the expanded playoff is you could have some good teams. That number five team's going to have to play the first week, and they could very well be a national championship contender and lose a quarterback. And I know everybody has to go through it, but it's just tough.
The new playoff format is way better than the current one because the top four earn a bye,
sure,
so they don't have to risk it. Whereas now they're playing an extra game and risking injury before going into a playoff. It's the opposite of the way it should be. And Dusty, I was throwing this out there. It was put on Twitter last night. What is the incentive for Georgia, Michigan, TCU, or USC to play in the conference title games when the only consequence of playing would be losing and letting teams who weren't good enough to play this weekend jump you? Now, to me, the misusage is the word incentive. There's incentive. You win, you're in the playoff. There's incentive, win a conference title. However, why should you have to win the conference championship twice? For instance, TCU's already got undefeated and beaten everybody in the conference. Why do they have to beat a team a second time? Why does K-State get a second shot at TCU? That's not really right. Also, Michigan beat the best team in the Big Ten. They've beaten everybody. Why should they have to risk a Big 12, a playoff berth, which they think we're okay, but why should they have to risk playing an extra game against a four-loss team? Mm-hmm. Why should Georgia, who's clearly been the best team all year long, have to risk injury and a conference title game appearance against a three-loss LSU team when everybody knows Georgia's the best team in the SEC? And USC, even though they lost to Utah, why has USC got to go ahead and play an extra game when they were 8-1 and won the conference, no tie? They were 8-1. They are at the top of the standings. If you didn't have conference title games, this would be over. You'd have four conference champions already crowned, and now they've got to go win the conference championship a second time. And then these others that weren't good enough to win it a first time somehow get a do-over if one of these trips up. The system's backwards.
Well,
but it's a money grab. What's weird to me is it was a money grab to have conference title games, yet you turned down $450 million each of the last 10 years not to have a full-fledged playoff. And by the way, in related news yesterday, the college football playoff people, committee, whatever, all those people involved, they want to expand the playoff to 12 teams, all right, 2026, but they really want to implement by 2024. They've sent out an ultimatum to the Rose Bowl to basically say, you got to figure out what part of this you're going to be a part of.
Yeah.
And if they don't, listen to this, if they don't get this all agreed upon by here in the next week or two, it's possible that that college football, all right, loses $450 million by not having a 12-team playoff in 2024. And I'm sitting here and I'm like, you went and money grubbed for conference title games that don't bring in nearly as much as $450 million per year. You could have had all this time. That's why I've never understood and never will why there was such a fight against the expanded playoff in the first place, because it's more money for everybody, and I thought everybody wanted more money, and I'm okay if people don't want more money, but clearly they do, or they wouldn't have had conference title games. Like, it's not right that these four teams have to win a conference title a second time, but it's all about money. It's all about money. It's all about money. But yet all these years, they had all this money they could have made by having extra playoff games and actual playoff, like every other level of football does. At every level of football, there's a playoff. Division II, Division III, pro football, high school football. I mean, for crying out loud, there's even playoff formats in Pee Wee Pop Warner football. But college football, passed on all this money. Why? I never have understood that. So we get back to, why are these four teams in peril? Because of money. But oddly enough, if you put in the system you should have had in all along, these four teams would be sitting out this week.
Yeah, it's the moment they went to four teams, I feel like the conference championship model was outdated.
They should have just not had a conference
title
games.
When they started the conference championship, it was what the Big 12 kind of said, an extra data point, right? It's an opportunity. SEC did it first, right?
Sure.
And they're trying to get another opportunity to get a win to get their team higher in the rankings, right? Because at that point, when this first thing started, there was no BCS. The first conference championship game was in the early 90s in the SEC. There was no BCS. It was a data point. Mm-hmm. It was what the Big 12 talked about when they started doing their new conference championship again, an extra data point. And so the SEC found out, hey, we can pit two of our best teams against each other here, and they can play, and if the right team wins, maybe we jump to number two and we get a chance to play for a national championship. Right. Maybe we'll jump to number one if we win a bowl game and be the champions, right? Because it was all decided by voters back then. And so, but now once you started the BCS, it was that data point to where maybe if we're on the outside looking in at three here, we can get this win here and jump somebody else that, you know, K-State's a perfect example in 1998, right?
Mm-hmm.
Florida State's the perfect example of jumping K-State to get to the national championship game because K-State lost. And so,
in the playoff format, Ohio State jumped TCU after TCU won by 52
exactly.
points.
And so it's a situation where that thing mattered when there was only two teams that you were trying to get into this thing. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's just creating unnecessary chaos.
I will tell you one reason why you do have a conference title game, but it doesn't apply to every conference, and that's why it's really messed up. The SEC have a conference title game, and they should have a conference title game because, okay, if Georgia and Alabama both go undefeated in their divisions, who is the SEC champion?
Right.
If they don't play each other, who's the SEC champion? So, and the problem is you have too many teams in your conference, so you can't play a round robin like the Big 12. There's no sense in the Big 12 playing an extra game, but it makes sense for the SEC. It makes sense for the Big 10, technically, although eliminate divisions. And then, but if Ohio State and Michigan, let's say Nebraska. Nebraska is back to the days they were in the 90s. And Nebraska's undefeated, and Ohio State's undefeated, but they don't play each other. It's possible. You could have two undefeated teams in your conference.
Sure. Yeah.
How would you determine a conference champion? Well, we saw what happened with TCU and Baylor. They tied. They didn't have a conference title game, and that really hurt TCU to get. And whereas Ohio State, well, they're a clear-fledged championship team. And I get it, but it's not an equal playing field. It makes it difficult, and that's because the SEC's gotten too big, or they have too many schools to obviously do a round robin. Big 12's not big enough, although they are going to get bigger, as we know, in the future. And the Big 10's got too many teams, and they continue to add. So thus is the argument, you have to have a conference title game, not only for money, but to actually legitimately crown a conference champion. Whereas the Pac-12 shouldn't have to, and the Big 12 shouldn't have to. And because of the so-called data point they needed, they've added it, and now it might burn them in the butt.
Yeah. I think,
again,
in normal years, I think you still have a couple.
So the punishment is smaller conferences that aren't the big conferences are getting punished because they've got to do more.
You still have a couple of teams that are usually trying to play their way in. Say Clemson doesn't lose this last game. Clemson probably has a chance to, or in theory, has a chance to say, hey, we're a conference champion. We could play our way in. Because they wouldn't be down at 8 or 9. They'd be up at 5 or 6 if they didn't lose that last game. LSU is kind of in the same situation. If they didn't lose this last game, they could be at 5 or 6. And in theory, have a chance to play their way in. If, say, a Southern Cal or TCU or, you know, maybe even Michigan tripped up. But it's not a normal year, so I don't.
Yeah, this year is,
nor,
is
no
the worst
no year is ever
because,
normal.
Yeah, there's matchups in these championship games that literally don't mean anything.
No.
for the rest of the way.
No,
and K-State TCU is the only game where there's two top 10 teams playing in the championship.
And you could actually argue that nothing changes no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
You can argue TCU's in even with a loss, and in K-State loses, they're going to Sugar Bowl anyway. So really, what are we determining here? If that's the case, we're playing an extra game for money.
The Pac-12 is the only thing that really you feel like is...
That's what Herbstreit said last
night. Some people feel like is part of that.
That's what Herbstreit said last night. I said the only drama here is USC and Utah.
Could you imagine?
Herbstreit said last night, the only drama we got left is Utah and USC on Friday night, which means Saturday, the conference title games are kind of mute.
That's what he's saying, assuming that TCU doesn't drop out because they lose to K-State. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be the momentum that we're seeing from people. The talking heads are calming down a little bit, going, okay, TCU does have a really good strength of schedule. Oh, we actually did some research, and some people that actually have a platform have actually been preaching it. And, oh, yeah, they're having to play a top 10 K-State team, not a number 22 K-State team. Mm-hmm. So that helps TCU. So I think TCU is in pretty good shape, although I think that I hadn't even thought about what Jason mentioned. If you have a big injury to your quarterback or something, and then you lose badly because your quarterback goes out early, that could change the committee's eyes and say, well, who do we want in? Ohio State with C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young in Alabama instead of TCU and a backup quarterback? I mean, that's a very good point. I hadn't really thought about that. Once again, that's all these four teams risking injury mm-hmm. on top of risking a chance to be knocked down a peg by a committee of people that don't play football and other teams that sit after. I told Jason earlier, the analogy is you're in the clubhouse in golf. You've put a 4-under score up, all right? You got a 68. All right, these other four teams are 2, 3, 4 strokes ahead, and the committee is just determining how badly you play the last hole and not figuring in how great you were the first 17 because they're waiting for you to falter on the 18th hole, even though the other teams faltered on hole 15 and 16. We're going to, you know, the recency bias thing as we talked about. But I think it's fairly clear-cut. USC wins, they're in, they lose. Then the argument is Ohio State or Alabama. And last night of Ohio State ahead of Alabama, Dusty, they asked if that could change. And they said, they made it sound like it could. It's like, why? Ohio State and Alabama aren't playing today or next week, so what's changed? Well, the argument is, oh, if Michigan would lose to a 4-loss team, Ohio State's loss isn't as appealing. And if LSU beats Georgia, then Alabama's 2 losses are more appealing. And I think when you start talking about what losses are more appealing, you've lost track of the whole point of this whole thing. And they at the same time say, winning. Why is TCU so good in their spot? Because they win. Well, Alabama lost twice. You know, well, they lost a close game twice. Well, so did USC lost on a 2-point conversion in the final seconds. Only one time did they lose a close game. Why should USC be? Listen, if USC loses this game, why should they be behind Alabama? They shouldn't be.
No. You'd have the same loss.
But they will be.
Right. You'd have the same loss to a good Utah team twice instead of.
Could be two LSU, super tight close games.
LSU
just like Alabama.
Might be a 4-loss team by the time this is all said and done. I don't.
You know, Alabama's best win is against 20th-ranked Texas in Austin, and Texas quarterback got hurt in the first quarter, or they might lose that game. And their other best win is Mississippi, Ole Miss, or Mississippi State. Those are their best wins. They lost to an LSU team that lost to 5-7 Texas A&M. So we can play this game until the cows come home. Well, you know, they had 2 close losses and da-da-da-da-da. But here's the fun part. If the new expanded playoff was in place today. And I want to use this argument against the people that tell me, well, there's no point in even having 4 teams. There's only 2 good teams. And that's somebody told me the other day, there are only 2 good teams, Michigan and Georgia. TCU's undefeated. What the hell are they? Chop liver? I mean, they've got a better strength of schedule. How can you possibly say that Michigan and Georgia and we shouldn't even have 4-team playoff? TCU deserves to be in. Well, there is no question about it. What is not, like, if Texas or Oklahoma was undefeated, would those same fans say that they shouldn't be in? Of course not. And even if they won close games, they'd be like, well, the whole point is to win. TCU's won all those games. So, yes, you have to, listen, if we had the BCS right now, TCU'd be screwed. It'd be Michigan and Georgia, and TCU'd be left out. So I guess that's one good thing about the playoff for this year, is that at least TCU is going to get a shot, and another conference champion will have a shot. But technically, your 5 conference champions do not. Thus, it's flawed. But if you had a 12-team playoff, and people, oh, we don't need a 12-teamer. We don't even need a 4-team. I think Michigan and Georgia are the best 2 teams in football. Well, that's your opinion, okay? But you don't, even if you're right, even if Georgia and Michigan are head, shoulders above everybody else, even if you're right, let's assume you're right. They're just way better than TCU and USC and everybody. Wouldn't it still be fun to have matchups like this? Here's what the expanded playoff would look like if it was in effect today. You ready for this? All right. Number 12, Tulane would play Ohio State. Okay. That might not get people excited, mm-hmm. but Tulane beat a top 10 team in K-State in Manhattan. All right. USC would await the winner. USC, Ohio State. That would be a damn good game, don't you think?
Yep.
Yeah. So move on to the semis. Right now, we can't have it because we only allow 4 to the invitational tournament. Alabama would be the sixth seed. They'd play 11th seed Utah. Now, that'd be pretty attractive. I think that'd be a fun game. I think Alabama would win. And then Alabama would play TCU, who gets a first-round bye, a 6-3. I'd like to see that. SEC versus Big 12 champ in the quarterfinal. Why not? Okay, Tennessee would be the 7th seed. They'd play K-State, the 10th seed. You don't think K-State could beat Tennessee? I think they could.
Mm-hmm.
All right, especially with backup quarterback. K-State, then, if they won, would be playing Michigan, and I think they can hang with Michigan. Okay, that would be not a horrible draw for K-State, in my opinion.
No.
But that would be the draw for K-State. If the playoff was today, K-State would be against Tennessee, and then they win, they would play Michigan in the Orange Bowl. On the other side, I mentioned USC would play Ohio State, Tulane winner. Clemson, Penn State. You don't think that'd be an interesting game to watch? Clemson gets Penn State. The winner gets Georgia. Your quarterfinals would be Georgia, let's say, against Penn State, USC against Ohio State, Michigan versus K-State, or Michigan versus Tennessee, Alabama versus TCU. Then, if you get past that, and let's say it's Alabama, it could be Alabama-Tennessee in a rematch in the national semifinals. It could be TCU-K-State in the national semifinals. It would have USC, you could have Ohio State or USC playing Georgia in the semifinals. Yeah, you might still end up with Georgia and Michigan in the final. So be it. The NCAA tournament, we know who the two or three or four best teams are going in. They don't always get there, do they?
No.
No. And there is the thing we've seen in the NFL where getting a first-round bye hasn't really helped you as much as people think. So everybody talks about the four teams having a bye in this situation, which they deserve and should have, in this Georgia, USC, TCU, Michigan be the top four if the playoff format that they want to adopt and have in place by 2024 was in effect this year. But it could hurt them by these other teams getting some momentum, playing well, going into a game against a Georgia or a USC. Listen, I hear how Georgia's so great. Georgia was up 13-10-7 on Georgia Tech in the third quarter. All right? Georgia beat Kentucky 16-6, and Kentucky's not all that. So I'm not sitting here going to tell you that Georgia's clearly the best team that can kill everybody, and they should just automatically, you should bet all the money on Georgia. I'm not convinced of that. I'm not convinced of that. Now, if I picked the four teams that are left that are seeded right now, would I pick Georgia? Yeah, mm-hmm. I would. I would, but I do think USC and Georgia would be an entertaining game. Mm-hmm. So I would love to see an expanded 12-team playoff because, one, we're going to actually determine who should be the fourth best team or who should move into the quarterfinals, semifinals, instead of this, well, hi, I'm a person that was an AD at a school 22 years ago, and I'm going to help decide who is into the College Invitational four-team tournament.
I don't know if this has been discussed big time or not, but say we go to 12, and are these conference championship games going to stay put? And if so, what's, like you said,
that's a question.
What's
yes.
the incentive going to be?
Agreed.
Could you do a thing where
could get you a bye?
Yeah,
but
say,
you're playing an extra game, so it is. So is yeah.
Say you win your conference championship, you have the ability to. You know, I know there's going to be five, but that's okay. There maybe five if the conferences stay intact. But let's just say we could do the same theory here and give the top four of those five a bye. And
well, that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the situation. The six highest ranked champions get automatic spots. All right. The next six highest ranked teams get at large spots. That's the 12. Byes go to the top four conference champions. So it behooves you to win your conference championship. Mm-hmm. You're automatically in. And if you are the fourth out of the five or six champions, then you're going to get a bye. If you're the fifth highest rated conference champion, then you're going to have to play a 12 seed in the first round.
Yep. So that's.
So and by the way, the first round games are at the higher seeded site. So they'd be hosting, which is more revenue for that school and that town and that campus and everything else. So to me, it can't come soon enough, but that's just me. Yeah. All right. Let's move on. The Donkeys. I almost said the Donkeys. I did actually say the Donkeys. My bad. The Broncos. They are so bad that NBC has decided we don't even want the Chiefs. We love Mahomes and Kelsey and the Chiefs, but the Broncos are so bad, we don't want to watch that on Sunday Night Football. So they have flexed the Dolphin Charger game on December 11th on a Sunday to 8:20, and the Chiefs Broncos game has now been flexed back to 3:05 in Denver. So that's how bad the Broncos are.
There are a lot of years where you could just put that game on there and just say, ah, it's a rivalry. We got the Midwest for a Sunday night. Thank you, Russell.
Turning down. I think what's happening is I think there's the opportunity maybe, although, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's really another game. Technically, I think you can have 6 primetime games as a team. And the Chiefs, I believe, have 5. I believe. I don't have it right in front of me. So the Chiefs would have had 6 with Denver. So by flexing this out, they could flex the Chiefs
back in somewhere else.
Yeah. However, this week would have been the time to do it against the Bengals. Because the Broncos, the Texans, you're not going to flex. I don't think you're going to flex Seattle. I mean, you might, but I doubt it. And then the Broncos and Raiders, I don't think you're flexing those, but... Well, I guess they could make it Raiders-Chiefs, even though the Raiders might be out of it, on a Saturday night. I don't know. Who knows? We'll see. Basketball last night, there was a really good game in Wichita.
They've been pretty good in the overtime here from the line as I talk him out of that free throw.
Allen rolls out. Okafor at the buzzer. It won't go. And Missouri outlasts Wichita State.
So, turnovers, missed free throws, haunted Wichita State last night, 88-84, overtime loss to Missouri, who's undefeated 8-0. Craig Porter Jr. and Jaquan Walton, 14 apiece for the Shockers, who are 4-3. They led by 10 with 5-12 to play. Couldn't hold on. Missed free throws, that'll cause problems. They shot 54% from the floor to the Shockers. They made a season-best 12 three-pointers, but they missed 8 of their 14 free throws, and they had 20 turnovers. And those are the great equalizers. Missouri outscored Wichita State 26-7 in fast break points, 29-18 off turnovers. Shockers now 4-3 will be in Manhattan to take on K-State Saturday night at 8 o'clock at Bramlage Coliseum on ESPNU. The notable game last night, Baylor got rocked by Marquette, 96-70. So Baylor will fall big time, I would think, in the rankings when they come out again next week. Speaking of the top 25 college basketball rankings, they were released here recently. Houston, for the first time since 1983, and future member of the Big 12, is the number one team in America. Texas, a current member of the Big 12 who's going to go SEC, is number 2. Virginia's 3. Arizona 4. Purdue, who beat Gonzaga and Duke, is 5. Arizona beat Creighton. Baylor is 6, but as we said, now they'll fall big time. Creighton is 7, UConn is 8, and KU is 9th. Indiana is 10th. Other Big 12 teams, Gonzaga dropped from 6 to 14, by the way. Other Big 12 teams, Carolina dropped from 1 to 18. We discussed that yesterday. Other Big 12 teams, Iowa State, the only other one I can mention, and they're in at number 23. K-State got 1 vote in regards to their 6-0 starts. That leads us to K-State in Focus. It's time for K-State in Focus, our focus on Kansas State athletics, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. Well, just to put a little bow on the football discussion for K-State, K-State was picked before the season to finish 5th out of 10 teams in the Big 12, and almost all the time they always exceed those projections. They're now the number 10 team in all of college football in the latest playoff rankings. D. Scott Fritchin put out there, proving people wrong since 1989, and on this date, 1988, Bill Snyder became the head coach of K-State, and the first year's head coach was 1989. That certainly makes sense. I thought that was a great tweet by D. Scott Fritchin, as K-State pick 5th in the Big 12, is the number 10 team in the country. They're number 2 in the Big 12 right now and could be Big 12 champions. And it looks like essentially they're going to the Sugar Bowl against the SEC team, Tennessee or Alabama, no matter what happens Saturday morning in Arlington against TCU. The K-State men's basketball team's off to a 6-0 start. They run the Grand Cayman Islands Classic. They're back in action tonight against Butler, and that is at 5:30, I believe it is, tonight at Hinkle Fieldhouse, just a very historic place to watch basketball. Jerome Tang on Butler.
They're balanced. They're very balanced. You got to guard all 5 guys that they put on the floor. And so we're going to have to guard our yard, because if you can guard one-on-one, then you're not in rotations, and that really helps your defense. So they run some Princeton stuff, some come-together actions. They can play through their 5-man either on the block or at the elbow. And so that's going to pose us a problem.
All right, so this will be a good test for K-State tonight on the road in what will be a hostile environment, a very small gym, but it's iconic. Hinkle Fieldhouse. They filmed some of the scenes for the state championship game of Hoosiers right there at Hinkle Fieldhouse. Yeah. So there is a lot of aura and history there, and I think that'll be a great, great, great experience for the K-State men's basketball team there at Butler. Whether or not they win or not, I don't know. That's 5:30 this evening. Of course, the football team taking on TCU, the only conference title game with two teams in the top 10 battling each other. 11 a.m. at Arlington. ESPN College Game Day will be there. And the big guys, Fowler and Herbstreit, are calling the game along with Holly Rowe. So K-State and TCU, they are going to be the center of the football universe coming up on Saturday morning and into the afternoon. K-State men will be back in action against Wichita State on Saturday at 8 o'clock. As I mentioned earlier, K-State women will take on Houston. That'll be at 1 o'clock on Sunday. And big news for the volleyball team, Susie Fritz, K-State's all-time winningest volleyball coach, will not return next year following 22 years leading the Wildcats. She took over the program in 2001, helped lead the Wildcats reach the NCAA tournament 17 times, 13 as the head coach. Athletic Director Gene Taylor said, Coach Fritz has poured all of her energy into this program for the last 20-plus years, and we will forever be grateful for her leadership and advancement of K-State volleyball. Fritz won 393 matches, won 60% of her matches as head coach at K-State, led the Wildcats to national ranking 12 different years out of the 22 that she coached, and she won 51% of her Big 12 matches as well, and helped lead the Wildcats to their first and only Big 12 title in volleyball back in 2003. There is a national search for her replacement, and that has already begun, so we shall see how it works out for K-State volleyball, but Susie Fritz will no longer be the head coach. And so you look at Jeff Mitty's now the longest tenured coach there in regards to the major sports for K-State, because Coach Kleiman's been there for what, 4 or 5 years. You've got Tang in his first year. The volleyball's gonna have a new head coach, and Jeff Mitty's been there I think now 9 years for K-State women's basketball, so that's kind of interesting.
A lot of times that doesn't bode well, but K-State seems to be going in the right direction, though, with a lot of their, with Kleiman and Tang. So
and building new facilities. Mm-hmm. They got the football practice facility they're building, and there's less parking now, but they have plenty of land out there, and so it is interesting to see all the improvements that they're making. Of course, KU is hoping to make a lot of improvements at their football stadium, as we talked about earlier, that's tied to a clause that's in Lance Leipold's contract as well. So K-State in focus, but the biggest thing that K-State fans are looking at, no offense to the basketball teams, but K-State fans are really, really pretty much fixated on one thing. Getting to Arlington to watch the Big 12 title game, or making sure they're in front of a TV to watch the Big 12 title game. And by the way, the last two times that a Big 12 champion was a Big 12 team was undefeated, but playing in the Big 12 championship game involved K-State both times, and now a third time.
Nice.
In 1998, of course, K-State was undefeated, lost to Texas A&M. We know all about that.
Yep.
2003, Oklahoma was undefeated, and K-State played the role of the upset and won big time in that game, although Oklahoma still went to the national title game. So could K-State make it 3-for-3 in regards to an undefeated team in the Big 12 championship game? It involves K-State. K-State was on the bad side of it in 98. They were on the fun side of it in the upset in 03. Does that mean that K-State is going to be on spoiling the party for TCU, or will everybody just be happy? This would be the equivalent of a tie, if you really think about it. If K-State beats TCU, but it's somewhat of a good game, TCU still goes to the playoff, K-State goes to the Sugar Bowl,
everybody's happy,
right? Except TCU technically doesn't win the Big 12 championship.
Yep.
And if K-State loses, they're still going to the Sugar Bowl, from what we've been told, and TCU wins, they're in the playoff. So wouldn't it just behoove K-State to lose the game and make it good for the conference? I mean, I say that facetiously, tongue-in-cheek, but let me ask you a question. When people talk about, an NCAA tournament, K-State's knocked out. We really need to cheer for the Big 12. I'm cheering for the Big 12. Well, if you're all about the Big 12, then why aren't you going ahead and saying, listen, let's go ahead and let K-State lose this game? It helps the Big 12 that TCU automatically is in the playoff, and we're going to Sugar Bowl anyway, so we're not losing anything except a trophy.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. You care about your team first, and when your team's eliminated, I want the rest of the Big 12 to do well, which is ridiculous, because those are teams that, if they do really well, are going to hurt you in recruiting, that you compete against all the time. It's ridiculous and silly, and you know what I think of it, and I know Dusty feels the same way, but really, you think about it, if it's all what everybody's saying it is, and TCU is going to be in with a loss or a win no matter what, we're really talking about in virtual, it's like a virtual tie here. There's nothing to be gained other than somebody hoist a conference trophy. And TCU could say, you know what? If we win the national championship, that's better than the Big 12 championship. And K-State's going, well, that's the best we can do is get the Big 12 championship. Then we go to the Sugar Bowl, hoist that trophy if we win that game, and we don't win the national title. And everybody gets trophies.
I hate the Big 12 championship game with where it's at. And it's just like... I don't think they needed to add it. I don't think it was necessary.
They needed to add it the year they got the shaft.
Yeah, that the year
but that
they
that
didn't
was,
have
no,
it.
That was reactive.
So
they didn't need it in the
even,
future.
Even though I hate it, right?
Yeah.
I still want to go see my team win it.
Oh, absolutely.
Like my team's part of it. I definitely want to go see them win it.
Right.
And that's what it comes down to for me is going ahead and winning a Big 12 championship. And like you said, this is the only thing K-State can hold up here
right.
is this trophy and then maybe a Sugar Bowl trophy.
Which would be a heck of a year.
You know, even if they don't hold up this trophy, they still have a chance to hold up another trophy, which would be their bowl game trophy. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I think you got to go grab a coach. Right. That'll wrap it up here. K-State in Focus is brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. All local sports information posted at ncksports.com. High school basketball locker room chats tonight on the radio here at 5:15. We talked to the coaches of Beloit, Osborne, Smith Center, and Thunder Ridge. Tomorrow at 5:15, we talk to basketball coaches, girls and boys of St. John's, Tipton, Lakeside, Rock Hills, and Sylvan Lucas.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.